From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made this morning when emails began to arrive in our Connections inbox. The messages are from men who served the U.S. military as interpreters in Afghanistan and Iraq. I want to share some of what they've written. In one message, a former interpreter says, quote, "I'm too afraid of the Taliban here. Also, since the Taliban occupied the country, I am in my home. I can't go outside of my home because if the Taliban recognize me as a USA Forces interpreter, immediately they will kill me and my family and my four kids. Please evacuate local interpreters as soon as possible. I can't trust anyone here. It is too dangerous for local interpreters," end quote. Another email from an interpreter writes, quote, "I 100% believe that the Taliban will come after us someday. They are brutal, having no honor of humanity and killing people. But now, how should we hope for a brightened future? In fact, there is no hope for being safe and how long we would be able to hide ourselves from them," end quote. Since the Taliban's takeover of Afghanistan, multiple media outlets and people on the ground have described the situation there as chaotic. There are targeted assassinations happening, including those against former interpreters. Late last month, Democratic Senator Richard Blumenthal called on President Biden to appoint an evacuation czar. CNN reports that Senator Blumenthal urged the administration to expand its efforts and to, quote, "articulate a clear, effective strategy to expedite the evacuation of Afghans at risk and U.S. citizens who are still in that country," end quote. We've talked about SIVs in the past, special immigrant visas. You may know that it can take several years, or at least that was the time frame for a long time, for former interpreters to be granted visas and to find safety in the United States. A local organization called Keeping Our Promise has been leading the efforts to help SIVs resettle in Rochester. In fact, Executive Director Ellen Smith tells us an SIV family is arriving in Rochester today. But she'll also tell us the process has not been good enough. This hour, it's a chance to talk to Ellen, along with two SIVs who got out of Afghanistan in the 2 to 4 days following the Taliban's takeover of Kabul. They now live in Rochester, talking about the current state of the crisis, the SIV programs, and what people can do to help refugees. Our guests include the executive director of Keeping Our Promise. Ellen Smith is back with us. Welcome. How are you?
Hi, Evan. It's great to be back on your show. We're all exhausted. We have helped resettle 216 individuals since last December, and since June, 180. 69 families have come to Rochester who have SIV status. And it's been a challenge. This time last year, we said that we would take 40 to 60 individuals, and here we are at 216. So we've kind of surpassed the goal that we had set for ourselves to get families here.
Hey, grab that microphone, bring it a little closer so I can hear you even better here. Going back to August, when you talk about since June, 180, that was really the time frame in which it was pretty clear that a Taliban takeover of the country was happening, but the acceleration, as we've discussed, happened faster than some expected. Since August, do you feel that this, is this a tenable situation in this community? Can we accept more if the need arises, Ellen?
We can. There's some really significant barriers right now to accepting more families. And first and foremost is just housing. We were told a family of eight were arriving on Friday to be here yesterday. And then at 10 o'clock in the morning, it was, by the way, they're going to be here at 11 o'clock in the morning. There's very little notice that these families are coming in off of military bases to Rochester. We used to get maybe 10 days notice, and now, we're getting 24 hours notice if we're lucky. We're all trying our best, but when you just don't know who's coming in, how are you going to find them housing? So right now we are starting to put families in a Hilton extended stay. while we find cosigners to get them into, safe, clean, decent housing. And that's a problem.
What do you need most from our community right now?
We need willing landlords, landlords who understand and want to work with our program and understand that when I say I need a 3-bedroom house, but I don't know who's going in there, that they can have a little bit of flexibility to work with us on that. And we need funds to pay for that first month's rent or maybe 2 months' rent until these families can get their DSS benefits that they are entitled to. Each family may get 180 days of DSS.
How can people reach you to provide help? And if people are, if listeners feel like I would do anything, I'm awfully busy. All I can do right now is write you a check. Will you take it?
We will take that check, and they can go to keepingourpromise.org and the Donate Now tab to help us out. And the money is used for their food until they can get SNAP. Their rent, and then we're having problems right now because these families are coming in with very little documentation, so we can't even set up an electric account for them, and because they don't have a social security number. There's all these little details that steps that need to be, overcome, and they need help paying their utility bills. Again, until they get settled, they get a small welcome grant, and they can get some DSS money to help them with their bills. Another important thing for families or people to remember about our families is the DSS amounts are very, very small. The amount that a family is given to live on, that amount has not gone up since October 2012. So a family of three will only get $732 a month towards rent, and that's heat included. And a family of four gets like $879. A family of five gets $1,023. This is just not a sustainable amount of money, not just in our community or anywhere.
Well, it's the first thing I'm going to do when I get off the show today. I'm going to jump on keepingourpromise.org and click on the Donate tab because it'll probably take 90 seconds. And my guess is listeners right now could do that in 90 seconds or less and help you if they so choose. As the host of this program, I can only tell you to donate to WXXI, but I can tell the community that you, if you want to donate, now you know how to do it. And before I talk to the guys, as you like to call them, Ellen's got a lot of guys in this town and a lot of families that they've helped. People, I think, Ellen, after August 15th, we were watching, it seemed like hour by hour, and as so often happens after a crisis, it's pretty quickly kind of forgotten or shelved. So one of the things that I think a lot of Americans thought was that in the week after Kabul fell, roughly a week to 2 weeks before the end of August, there was this idea that, well, that's your window to get people out. And then once the last flight left the airport, the idea was the Taliban's taken over and now no one can get out. Since really, I guess, September 1st then, are people still getting out? How is it happening that you understand?
So there were there's a couple of projects being run by former State Department people, active State Department people, U.S. military people called Project Pineapple, Project Argo, Operation Pineapple, Project Argo, and Team America. And these are charter flights that people are privately funding to help Afghans get out of Afghanistan and to safe places. It doesn't mean that they're allowed to come here to the United States. It means that we've got a family that was able to get out. Actually, there's eight people who were able to get out, and they are in Armenia right now while their paperwork is going through this long, slow, arduous process with the government. We have lots of people in Pakistan. We have got some families in Pakistan where they were able to get visas to get into Pakistan, but now those visas have expired, and we don't know what to do with them. They don't know what to do. I don't know what to do. This is an ongoing problem that I get these desperate emails every day, but I have to focus on who's coming into this community and what we can do now. And it really is a political solution that's up to our government to solve. And I don't feel like we are being listened to. that groups like ours who are have been doing this boots on the ground work, maybe we have been listened to, but I know Congressman Morelli's office has tried their best in helping the people that I've been trying to help in Afghanistan and to get out, but they're the staff member there is equally frustrated with trying to get answers from the federal government.
Can you tell me a little bit about the two men who are in the studio with us here, Bilal and Walid, who were able to escape Afghanistan August 17th and 19th, I believe, just days after Kabul fell to the Taliban, in those days in which we were all watching those images, those videos of packed military flights, every airplane packed, people desperate at the airport. These men were on some of those flights. Tell me a little bit about them before we talk to them.
Sure. So Walid is kind of an interesting case. We had our first connection in January 2019, and he was very hopeful that he was going to get his visa any day back in January 2019 and asked about resettling in Rochester. And he had a friend, a military colonel, I believe, who he had worked with who was in Utah. And he was kind of going back and forth on, should I go to Rochester? Should I try Utah? And, you know, so I give him the spiel on why they should come to Rochester. And I didn't hear from him. We hadn't really communicated until, I don't even remember, it was if Kabul was about to fall, if Kabul fell. I mean, it was so crazy for me during that time in August of sleepless nights and 3 weeks just of hell for our families. But he had contacted me, and I said, okay, get me in touch with whoever you worked with. And it turns out to be a Colonel Jeffrey Pounding. And I said, I need his phone number. And I called Colonel Pounding at home and I said, hi, you don't know me. This might sound like a crazy call. My name is Ellen Smith. I'm with Keeping Our Promise. I need a letter of recommendation to get this guy out of the country right now, like in 20 minutes, and I've got to get it to my congressman. And I just started connecting with any person in the military that he had worked with to say, you need to contact.
Did he say yes?
Yes. And I kept saying, you need to contact your, you know, I need to contact them, and we need to get them to contact their member of Congress right now, today. Like, there's no time. We've got to get you out. That's the only thing I knew what to do at that time. And get them on a State Department list for evacuation. Then with Bilal, I had learned that he was a newscaster. And I said, I don't know how you're going to get out. He was eligible under what's called the P2 program, which President Biden and Congress passed, extending visas. That was on August 6th. So he was eligible to get in. I just didn't know how he was going to get in. And he has friends here in Rochester who were begging me for help. And all I could say is, all right, I'll put him on the list. This magical, I'm putting the word list in air quotes. This magical list that we had to give to Congressman Morelli, who then turned it over to the State Department to say, these are the people that we want evacuated. And I don't even know that that list worked, right? Because we all saw the pictures. Mm-hmm. I don't know how these guys got out. I haven't had time to ask them. I think I'll find out today.
Wow. Unbelievable. What a story. Well, Bilal, let me start with you. And feel free, you're a newscaster, right?
Yeah.
You know a microphone. Grab that microphone. Yeah, bring it closer to you.
First of all, I say hello to you and the guys that are in technique teams. And so, hello to all those guys that they are now here to us. Yeah, I was news anchor and also political presenter show in Afghanistan. Actually, I started media when I was so small, in 2007 or 2008, when I was at a school under times. I was announcer of children programs in national TV. After that, I graduated from school. After that, I applied for the Mobi Group. I worked in the years for Shamshad TV and also for BBC. And I was, after that, I graduated my education. I graduated from law and diplomacy and also management and journalism. I have 3 degrees. And also, let me know that I read one semester of master's degrees in leadership, but unfortunately the situation became bad and I came there. In 2015, when I was worked with Matthew Potter, he was our line manager with USMBC contract, they will give some things that after that they will give to the medias. I worked with USMBC in 2015 with Matthew Potter, but after that, when I applied for BBC, I was so far from USMBC. And when 2 years I was in USMBC, and after that, 1 year I was worked with media advisor at the Parliament of Afghanistan. And up to present, in 2021, first 50 of August, I was in media already. I was announced news and political present. And in I actually, before I applied for SIV and also for P2, but Refl-ID of P2 of when I was in Afghanistan, that was done, and I get the P2 Refl-IDs that they sent me by US Embassy that sent me, and also in 2019 they sent me the approval of SIV, and in 70 date of. In 80 of August that I found an email from US Embassy that they say, Ismat Bilal Ahmadzai, you're ready for departure.
On August 18th?
Yes, 11 o'clock.
Three days after. The Taliban took over Kabul.
In 3 days, I was at home, and my mother and my father, they were so worried about me. They say, you can't go out of the home. Because I was so popular in Afghanistan. More than years, I worked for media.
So people knew your face.
Yeah. People know me.
And that probably put you in more danger.
Yeah. And actually, more than thousands of my shows already in YouTube. And every day in social media, when I discuss with people's political persons in the tables, that they say, they highlight some important things in social media. And after that, I was for example, we say famous and so popular in Afghanistan. And the people, every person know me, my face, that, oh, he is Bilal Ahmadzai, he's TV news presenter and political presenter shows. And after that, when I get the emails, I say to my families that I must to go. I must to leave Afghanistan.
On August 18th.
18, yes. 11 o'clock, I get this email from US embassies. Yes. In 3 days, I was at home and I get out from home. I didn't get out from the home.
So you had been, after August 15th, you knew you had to stay at home.
Yeah.
Did you expect Bilal to get the email? Did you think that you were going to get that email to get out?
When I get the email that you are ready for departure, you must to come to the airport, Mohammad Karzai International Airport.
Yeah.
At 4 o'clock, you will be come. When I come to the airport,
you had 5 hours.
Yeah. 11 o'clock, they send me an email and say at 4 o'clock you will be ready for departure. I say okay. Well, say just you and your families. I have two small kids and my wife. We are four members in my family. When I say okay, we say don't give anything with yourselves. Just give your documents and just your members. Don't give clothes, any other things.
Just go.
Just go, yeah. They say when we came to airport, when I saw that was so bad, I say I have two small children. I can't go from this line. That was so big lines. Maybe more than thousands of people there in front of the door of the airport. Yeah, I say I can't because those guys that they can't, but I can't because I have two small kids and I can't give these risks. Okay, I will be died here, but I don't want let my kids will be injured or any other things. Fortunately, dear was Isa as army soldiers that he was from United States.
United States.
I say, please, I want to talk to you. My level sounds will become so damaged. I say, please wait. I want to talk to you. There was Taliban, lots of Taliban. There was, and say the time was in this times the 6 evenings. The time was so late. I say, okay, we missed the air.
After 4 o'clock.
Yeah, after 4 o'clock. But when 4 o'clock we came there, after that I think, oh, we missed 3 o'clock. Three o'clock we came there. When 4 o'clock we are outside of the door and say we missed, maybe we can't go to the plan. They say after that. That soldier was camps and say, what's the reasons? I show all the emails, all the documents that I'm ready for departure. You must drop me in the airport because I have two small kids. Please help me and support me because I can't go by alone and both my wife because my kid will be injured. And also Taliban, sometimes they shoot the people, they hit the people. Yeah, the situation was so bad.
You couldn't leave without your wife and kids because you knew they would be targeted by the Taliban?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And
so what did the U.S. soldier say?
They say, okay, just wait a minute. I will talk with other guys and I will be back. Okay, I say, okay. After 30 minutes, again, the soldier came. That was very good, man. Again, he came. She say, gave me all your document to me. Say, please, don't think any other and I will be back. Okay, again, I will give them all the document and also my phone. Please, take this phone also and show the email to the peoples. They say, okay, they gave my phone actually also and with all my documents. I say, just waiting. If he will be come. If he will be not come, we'll nothing to do. Because the situation was on that time. Actually, I wasn't know that what should I do. I say just we are waiting inside and say I get scarves and put my face that anybody know me. And because of this, I put my face all of.
So you covered your face?
Yeah, I cover all of my face. And after that, I was inside of Dears that after 8 o'clock, that soldier again came.
They brought you in?
Yeah, 8 o'clock, they came again outside of the airport and say, please, with other two soldier others. He came. He say that one. He what we can say for that? He like suggest that camp. Please, there was Taliban, lot of Taliban. That army, they weren't in the sites. We are on that side. The soldiers say come. That one. That 4 persons. After that, the people say okay, go. And after that, we came safely at the airport. And unfortunately, 3 days more. We are in the airport.
So you got inside the gates,
but you
didn't just get on a flight and leave.
Yeah.
3 days?
Yeah.
Where were you? Was it your wife and your kids too?
Yeah.
Where were you sleeping?
On the ground?
Yeah, on the ground.
And same, unfortunately, there was not good formula, good foods, and everything was so bad. And after that, we finished 3 days in these situations, suddenly they say that all the travels will stop because airport is right now in damage and maybe at Stargate right now. You should wait and you should be try to put in safely place. I was so worried and so confused that what should I do? And after that, after 3 days, we didn't eat something good and food, and also the kids didn't eat good formula like this. And after 3 days, fortunately, we get a flight to Abu Dhabi, to Dubai. And after that, after 1 week, we came to Washington, after that to Anadona, Fort Bliss, and in Texas. And
Can I ask a question?
Yes, sure.
So when you finally got on a flight?
Yes.
You'd been in the airport for 3 days. Was it a packed flight? What was it like? Was it a military flight?
Yes, military flights. More than, I forget this, that. And that military plan was more than 800
people.
800 people. They are put it like, when you put some cartons or some things in
Everything is jammed
tight together.
Like this. But what was it like to be on that flight finally? Was it bizarre? I mean, was it frightening? Was it relief? What was that for you?
But I see we suddenly can't do anything. Say it's okay. Just please drop us from Afghanistan. Please get out us from Dears.
Yeah.
It was best chance for us, and also it was the best option. It was the best option because we save our life.
How are your kids?
They are good. And
how old can I ask?
One is 2 years and 2 months, and the other is 1 year also 2 months.
Oh my God.
Yeah, they're so small, and
I hope they don't remember when they get older. I hope they don't.
And right now, I'm so happy. In six November. Actually, when we finished the medical process and everything in camp, in 6 December, November, we came to Rochester. And right now we are so happy. And I hope that we make a good life for me, for my kids, and also my kids. I will try to learn more. And I will try actually to improve my English and
You're doing great, Bilal. Yeah.
And actually, my big hope is this, that I will try to complete my master's degrees.
Yeah. We are so happy you're here.
Thanks a lot.
I hope that your kids grow up and know that this community is glad that they're here. Yeah. Before I get Waleed's story, let me just ask you, I'm sure you have... Well, I don't know. Do you have friends or other family who are still in Afghanistan?
Yeah. I'm so worried about them. Actually, 3 days before, one other journalist that was so popular, they killed by Talibans. And
but the Taliban said, they said they'd be different this time. They would not true.
Yeah, but they target a person. They didn't accept that.
Yeah.
Yeah, because maybe I will explain this. For example, more than years, I say anything about Taliban. The Taliban is terrorists. Taliban killed the people. Taliban damaged the schools. Taliban killed the kids. Taliban do this, that. Everything Taliban do. Because Taliban is terrorist peoples. And right now, if they say Taliban, we are not kill you, but they will kill me. Because they have an enemy before they gave before this changes their regimes. And these journalists that they worked before in Afghanistan, I think they are not even Afghanistan.
Oh.
Yeah, and actually, two times they attacked Taliban and other mafias, special by me. I have lots of injuries in my hand and my body. And there is no camera I will show to the peoples. I have lots of injuries in my body. And also, in 3 days, I was in emergency. And I have lots of message from Taliban in social media, on Facebook, Twitter, and other things. And also, some trade letters they sent to our homes, to the other people, to our village, and our province. They said, if you want to go to the media, we'll kill you, we'll kidnap you. Or when I was working with U.S. Embassy, on that time also they sent me this kind of trade letters that please don't work with USA, because we don't like them.
Yeah.
Yeah, like this. And
it's not different this time.
Yes.
I'm really glad you're here. Thank you.
Thanks a lot. And right now also I'm so happy and that actually we found dear kind people, kind friends, and sometimes they support us, help us, and we'll try to be the best.
Oh, boy. That's,
thank you.
So Bilal, if you're just joining us, was able with his wife and two young children to escape Kabul after the fall of Kabul to the Taliban, was able 3 days after, 2 days after the fall, got an email, got to the airport, had to wait 3 days, and got on a flight, and eventually... here in Rochester, and here they are just trying to build a life, and this is what the future looks like for this family now. Ellen Smith, I watched you as you heard that story. That's probably the first extended version of that story you've heard, and there are so many like it, but did they all move you?
They moved me to tears. It was so crazy those weeks in August, and I didn't know who got out. You know, I didn't know Bilal got out. Until, you know, he was out and at a U.S. military base. And just this on Monday, yesterday, it turns out somebody else had gotten out, another family, and they're in Wisconsin, and I didn't know they got out. It was so chaotic, and I could only, during that time, all I could do with all these other volunteers helping was get all this information on these on our friends, on our allies, get them on the State Department list to be approved to leave. And it was just get them on the list. And once they were on the list, I just had to move on to the next person to get the next family on the list. So really, I didn't know who got out. I just didn't. It was just a chaotic time.
Ellen is the executive director of an organization called Keeping Our Promise, and they have been an absolute leader in making homes and space and an opportunity in this country, in Rochester, and in our community for SIVs for years. But now, I mean, it's December, and it feels like forever ago that August happened. But this country, we focus on a tragedy or an event, and then we sort of move on. And this hour, we are not moving on. We are focusing on what happened, who has come to this community, what the needs still are. If you want to donate to Keeping Our Promise, you can go to keepingourpromise.org. They are looking for all the resources they can get to help people with everything from rent, transportation, basic needs in this community. 180 people since just June in our community. And after we take our only break of the hour, we're going to meet Waleed, and we'll talk about his story next. I'm Evan Dawson, Wednesday on The Next Connections. There is a lot happening at the state level to address the cost of child care, offer universal child care, and to deal with child poverty in New York State. Assemblymember Harry Bronson, Assemblymember Sarah Clark, joining us on the program. Your chance to hear from them directly. State leaders on Connections on Wednesday. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. And Waleed is with us, who was an interpreter that Ellen Smith says your first contact with Waleed was January 2019.
Yep, that's right.
And Waleed, what happened in August? Can you tell the story of what happened with you?
I'll start. He emailed me asking for help. He messaged me.
First, I would like to take this opportunity to thank all those, my captain, Ron, our base commander, Jeff, my Marine captain, Justin, all those senators, and most importantly, Keeping Our Promise and Ellen Smith, for helping in saving our lives. That was tremendously abhorrent, chaotic, and ambiguous circumstances. I do not have any words to put across and thank Keeping Our Promise and Ms. Smith and all those who helped to include our names in an evacuation list, and that was the only way out. Otherwise, we apparently could stay behind in the slaughterhouse where unexpectedly no hope and mercy was left for us. In the United States, we are excited, feeling safe, with freedom and safety plus security. We are all feeling so happy for being in this wonderful and marvelous land of opportunity. And we will endure to pray that those who help, along with their family members, live a happiest life ahead for standing right next to us under such challenging, difficult, and complex time. We'll not forget for the rest of our lives. We'll be so grateful to you and going to remember your exceptional support and warm assistance forward. Thank you, ma'am. It's a very difficult, as Ellen said, we had contact in 2019 after my interview. I had an interview in January 2019, and I was pretty sure I will have my visa very soon, and I will be normally come to United States for rest of my life, but didn't work till I do remember that was Wednesday. I was in my office, and I knew Taliban will come and took over Kabul soon.
Where's your office? Were you in Kabul?
Yeah, I was in Kabul.
Yeah.
I was a university lecturer. So I just messaged her, Ellen Smith, and I told her we've been left behind. and we will be slaughtered soon. And I left my office and I went to home. And next, at the same day in evening time, Alan messaged me, replied to me, and he told me, do you have any contact with U.S. friends or whoever you work? I said, yes. In fact, I was contacting them. We keep sending message to each other, what should we do? So I provide the contact phone number, email address to one of my commander to whom I work in Afghanistan 2003 in Kunar province. So then she contact him and they figure out, they put our name in the list. And on 19th of August, I had an email from National Visa Center for the evacuation. So I should go to airport as soon as possible, and I should get in to the airport. So, and within a couple of hours, I had an email on 11 plus in the morning. So I left my home about 2 o'clock in afternoon. I get to the airport. Even though there was a lot of Taliban, but luckily we threw to those checkpoints, and now we get to airport. In airport, there was thousands of people who were waiting and were trying to be evacuated. So luckily, I had my email and gate pass from National Visa Center. There was a lot of shooting. My kids were so scared, but luckily, those who worked there, I showed my email and gate pass. Wasn't easy. Take some time. Went through a very hard time, and we get to airport. And I message Ellen. Hey, I got into airport. Wasn't an easy. Leaving everything within 1 hour. It's not an easy thing. I had a very decent life. Sorry.
It's okay. It's okay. Let's give Waleed a minute. And Ellen, what Waleed is describing, tremendous gratitude for your organization and for this opportunity, but I think we have to keep in mind that gratitude comes with the realization that, as he says, he had a decent life. He had a life that he liked, that he wanted to continue, and it was gone in an hour.
And it was a life that we as a country helped people like Waleed establish this life, and Bilal as well. You know, this is what we pushed for. The changes we pushed for over 20 years in Afghanistan was to build the society that these two men were part of. And then in a moment, it was gone. It was, or I should say, you know, when we agreed to negotiate with the Taliban and leave the Afghan government out of those negotiations, you know, I think
February 2020.
Yeah. And you know, you could see it coming. I don't think that anybody expected this. But I will say that, you know, we here in Rochester had fair warning. In early May, April, May, when we were being told by our Afghan friends here that in Herat or in Kunduz that the Taliban wasn't letting farm products into the cities. You know, they were kind of starting to lay siege to the cities, and you saw it coming. And then, you know, Kunduz fell and Herat fell, and it was just really, it was such a shock to watch the dominoes fall. I think a bigger shock for me and these guys was just, you know, the airport was insane, but the fact that we just left so many people, you know, as a nation, we left so many people. And Waleed and I were talking on the way over too, just how this has affected some of his his children. And I asked, you know, did any of your children's friends, do they know if they got out? Were they evacuated? And as far as we know, no. So his children are also, they're older. Bilal's children are younger. They're not going to remember. But, you know, his children will remember. They're older, and they had their friends that they had to leave.
Waleed, how old are your children?
Sorry.
No apologies necessary, sir.
I have four kids, two daughters, two sons. My older son is 15. Mm-hmm. My daughter is about 14, 11, and my youngest son is 8 years old. Luckily, they are enrolled in school, 10th grade. My son and my older daughter is in 8th grade. My other daughter in 6th grade and my son in 2nd grade. So, lucky we've been evacuated, but it's not an easy transition.
Oh, no, listen.
It's very difficult.
I feel that. I mean, it's very clear.
You know, it's so hard too, Evan. Like, just think, the people we're working with, they did everything right. They did everything right. They did everything our government wanted them to do. And I just want people to remember that and why we choose as keeping our promise to support these wartime allies.
Waleed, are your kids hanging in there? Are they okay?
They are okay, but a couple days ago they were crying. As I said, it's not an easy.
Yeah.
But they are lucky. They are here.
Do they crying because they miss? Miss home.
Yeah.
Miss home.
New environment, new culture, new law, new school, new system. It's not an easy, and it will take some time. But I'm pretty sure we will adjust soon. Very good environment here, very good people. My caring circle. They are providing a lot of help. Keeping our promise, we've been resettled. We've been our rent been paid. A lot of challenges. I'm sure a lot of challenges. Like my 8 years old son have work authorization and social security card, but I don't. It's another challenge for me.
Wow.
So, yeah. And this is just one of the really, you know, like you understand how things fall through the cracks. But, you know, these families are coming. They have nothing. And his kids have gotten their Social Security cards. And like his 8 year old is authorized to work. But he doesn't have his authorization to work yet and no Social Security number yet. And part of me is empathetic with our government because, you know, we had what? We evacuated whatever it was, 125,000, 35,000. We've got 85,000 that went into camps. So all of a sudden, over the course of 3 weeks, we have 85,000 people that you have to get all this documentation for. But one of the ways around this is there is a proposed bill before Congress that would grant these evacuees their legal permanent resident status and a green card, and that really needs to be done. I mean, we've allowed them to come in this country. We evacuated them. So just get it over with, because right now we are being told, oh, well, if they had chief of mission approval, then file this form and paperwork or go through these 8 new steps that you need to go through. And, you know, this evacuation has exhausted our families. And to ask them to go through 5 more, you know, steps on changing their status. And even that, the information we're getting from attorneys, which is, oh, well, they can continue on with their special immigrant visa application or they can file for asylum. discuss that with an attorney. Well, I'm sorry, we've got 216 individuals here since last December, 180 since August. We don't have attorneys, enough attorneys in this community to help do the paperwork to adjust the status for these families. And yet they need help. They're asking for help. It's complicated. The I sent Waleed one of the forms. It's like 14 pages, mm-hmm. right? And then we're being told in part of this Zoom discussion with other attorneys with the International Refugee Assistance Project is to consult an attorney. But there aren't enough attorneys to consult for the amount of people and amount of paperwork that needs to be filed. Yeah. So there is a political solution. There is a political solution, and that is to give these evacuees their legal permanent resident status, a green card.
Yeah. Let me take a phone call from Mark in Fairport. Go ahead, Mark.
Yes, I apologize. I pulled over and was listening to the show and had the speakerphone on, so I didn't want to talk on speakerphone. And let me say thank you for taking my call, but I want to get right to the point. I'm a retired director of IT. And listen to the show all the time as I'm driving back and forth. I've started a property management company and I'm a contractor. And I thought possibly my company can help with these people that are going through hell once they get into residence. And also I've been doing computer training and computer assistance to families and small business for the last 32 years. I don't want my company mentioned. This would be all pro bono, but I don't want to donate. I'd rather help with my hands.
Ellen, what do you say to that?
Go to keepingourpromise.org, and there's a tab where you can volunteer. It's called the Get Involved tab, and please sign up and volunteer with us. We can use your help.
So it's Keeping Our Promise or Keeping My Promise?
No, keepingourpromise.org.
Okay.
Can you do that, Mark?
Of course I can. I'll do that by this evening.
You're good.
thank you, Mark.
Thank you. What a beautiful thing to take the time to pull over and call and make that offer. And listeners, if that describes something that you might be able to do, and I'm not just talking about contracting help, I'm talking about probably different ways of helping, keepingourpromise.org, the Get Involved tab, there's a Donate tab. When you hear Waleed and Bilal tell their stories, those are representative of now dozens of people who have come here just since June and since the fall of Kabul. We wondered in August just how quickly we would see refugees in our community, and there are many who are here. Hearing Waleed's story, there are two things that are clear to me. We can't give them what they are missing and their friendships and what they feel they've lost. And, that's really hard. But this community can give a place to start and a place to feel welcome and comfortable. Do you feel that you can have that here? Are you confident you can have that?
Yeah, absolutely. They are very good people. I already have some connection with some families. They are coming every week to my house, spending some time with us. And explaining the culture. We explain our culture to them. It's a very good community. I'm really happy about that. So,
well, I hope that you are finding a community. You said a caring circle. I hope you are making friends. And
yeah.
He's got a good community, and he's good in Honeyoy Falls, too. It's a really nice little village to start a new life in. So the other thing I want to bring up, too, Evan, is some of the people we're bringing in. So here we have in the studio a news reporter, someone who had been a combat interpreter, worked for Mercy Corps, IRC, and then the World Bank. I'm also excited to say we have people from the Skate-A-Stan program, which is the program that worked with impoverished children and particularly girls on, empowerment and education. And we are very excited to have members of Skate-A-Stan. There is a documentary. I hope maybe we can get it at the Little Theater and show that. But we've got the Skate-A-Stan folks here. They are eager to try and work with and starting a Skate-A-Stan-type program here in Rochester for the youth here in our city. And I'm just thrilled to have them here. I think it's so exciting and what these Afghan families offer.
You know, it strikes me, Ellen, as we get ready to wrap here, one of the challenges for this community, if we really want to embrace and love and bring Bilal and Waleed and these families in and say, you're here and we're glad you're here, we have to hire them.
Yes.
For work. We have to appreciate their skills and give them a chance to build careers here. We have to welcome their kids here. We have to, as you say, take the gifts that they bring to this community and celebrate them now. And I think there's an opportunity for that. It's not just, hey, we got an apartment. Like, you know,
right.
Good luck. There's a real challenge to this community to do that intentionally.
Yes.
Are you confident that that will happen?
I'm confident by being on your show and
people need
reaching
to know,
out,
right? Yeah,
yes,
people need
and
to know.
Going to local Rotary
people
clubs and Kiwanis clubs and introducing our families and our program to people. And again, what our families have to offer this community and give them a chance. Give them a chance.
It's keepingourpromise.org to donate, to volunteer, to get involved. Waleed, thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much.
I'm glad you're here.
Thank you.
And Bilal, thank you.
Thank you. Thanks a lot. Thanks for your invite, and thanks for all those guys that they support us, and especially thanks from Ms. Elena Smith and our volunteers and every person at our organization that they support us.
1 year from today, we're going to come on the show with the same crew, and they're going to be working and thriving in this community, and we're going to hear these stories because we got to hold ourselves accountable as a community. So you're welcome back here. Thank you for being here.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Evan.
Thank you.
From the whole team here, Evan Dawson, Megan Mack, Emery Stein, Rob Braden, saying thank you for listening. Real perspective this afternoon. We'll talk to you tomorrow on Member Supported Public Radio.